What would you say, professionally speaking, if I told you a kid wrote a screenplay that was very autobiographical, and on page 37, he says he wants to kill his father?
I'd say maybe he should wait until the end of Act Two.
I'm serious, Andrea. I think he means it.
Come on, Brandon. We all have the urge to kill our parents once in a while. Doesn't mean we do it.
Wait.
Yeah. Right.
Hello, everybody.
This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 1, Episode 19, April is the Cruelest Month. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah B. Bunting.
Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Tara.
I'm really...
Hi, Dave.
Hi. Before you start, I just want to do my thing.
Oh, right, sorry.
Forgot. Which is the feed is changing come September. Update now so you don't lose out. Go to previously.tv/feedme for all the details. If you're on iTunes, don't worry about it. If you're on something else, go there. Better safe than sorry.
Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
As I was watching this one again, I was struck by how weird and strange it was. And then now that it's actually come time to talk about it, I'm so excited. And you?
I was surprised by how, like, these are pretty big stories, mm-hmm. both the B plot and the A plot. Mm-hmm. And yet again, like 27 minutes worth of
it's
actual
true.
Things happening, yep. dragged out over 46. There's a lot of creeping. Mm-hmm. Takes a long time.
Yeah, well, when we get to the A plot, we'll discuss why that is. But let's start with the B story. As we recall in our last episode, everyone took the SAT except Dylan. And in this episode, we have the B plot is SAT result mayhem / Donna's special. This is the first storyline that Donna has actually gotten. It's episode 19. This is the most she's had to do at all of her previous appearances in every episode combined, I think, don't add up to the storyline. So it's kind of out of nowhere. But anyway, so everyone is about to get their SAT results, as we hear in clip number 2.
It's 1 o'clock. I've got to call home.
Would you just for that?
Yeah, I heard you get 200 points just for writing your name on the SAT.
That's only if you spell it right.
Oh, that's funny, really.
You know, there's nothing funny about SATs. Our whole college careers hang in the balance. Aren't you guys even worried?
Yes, I'm worried. Fred Siegel's having a sale. I just know by the time we get there, everything in this nice tool will be gone.
Donna's a bimbo. Also, Brenda had to reschedule her SAT because she was getting a surgery that day, but whatever. I guess she still gets all of her results at the same time. I had this in my notes, and then I was like, oh, right, I don't actually care about the explanation for why Brenda's is at the same time as everyone else's.
Well, they're about to repeat junior year anyway.
That's true. That is the bigger crime. You are absolutely right. Brenda gets home, and she's very excited about opening her SAT results in clip number 3.
I don't believe this. 1190.
Oh, nice. See that.
630 math and 560 verbal.
Girl, you are UCLA so easy.
Or you of Minnesota.
I have to see Brandon's.
Oh, no way.
Mom, I know he did better than me.
Can we get out of here? I really have to go.
Why does Donna have to go? Cindy says it's because the girls probably want to get home and see their own scores. But is it? Spoiler alert, it isn't.
No.
while this is happening, the business that Cindy is in the middle of, and the reason that this episode is called April is the Cruelest Month, because she says it, because she is doing the household taxes. Now, I don't know why Jim would not do the house's taxes. He's an accountant. Can you explain, Sarah? Do you have a theory?
No, I can't explain. I don't understand why they have all those forms either, because mm-hmm. he is the one income
right
in the house. And if he's not going to do them, why wouldn't they just have like a junior partner in his firm
mm-hmm.
do them? I don't get it. I think it's just so she can say that line,
I guess,
put like place them in some kind of year context, but I don't see why they bothered.
Yeah, it's really dumb. Honestly. Especially, I mean, I get the whole thing of like, well, he's too busy to do the taxes because he's an accountant, he's doing everyone else's. But like, if you're an accountant, just start doing your taxes in like January, like whatever.
Or make the intern do it, like I said.
Or make the intern do it, totally. So Jim gets home. He realizes that it's that everyone's getting their SAT results. He wants to bet on the kids, which I think is kind of funny. Cindy refuses. Then finally, Brandon gets home, and we find out the answer in clip number 4.
Tell us? He has to tell us, doesn't he?
Well, it's between Brandon and the college of his choice.
No way.
Okay. 1190. Beat that.
You're kidding, right?
What's so funny?
I got 630 math, 560 verbal.
560 math, 630 verbal.
Twins, true to form.
It's gross.
It's wonderful.
It's gross. She was
it's sort of pathetic, actually, given that they're touted as geniuses.
Yeah, what is a perfect score? Or what was at the time?
At that time, it was 1600.
Okay, so that's not so great.
All right. No.
I agree with you.
The average.
So we find out later Kelly got a 1050, which she is pleased by, which, you know, seems even crappier to me. I didn't get a 630 math like Brenda, but whatever. She says that Donna claims she still hasn't gotten her results yet, which everyone thinks is kind of weird. And then over the course of the week, as everyone else is talking about colleges, Kelly is browsing the catalog to find out which ones have the best male-female ratio, which classic Kelly.
I did that too. Girls' school.
Mm-hmm.
It shows pretty well.
So then they have to take a regular test at school. Everyone is getting down to business. It's all essay questions. And then Donna freaks out and doesn't write anything and pretends she has a contact emergency to get out of it. And everyone thinks it's bullshit. There's a gif in the visual aids that I'm very proud of. Steve, especially, for someone who like barely gets a line in this episode, actually is pretty hilarious, rolling his eyes at
yeah,
Donna.
Love him.
And then everyone is comparing notes after class. Dylan, I didn't clip it. It was so dumb. Someone says they hate essay questions. Dylan's like, oh, I like them because, like, there's no right answer. Like, yes, that's the point of essay questions. Thank you, Dylan. But then everybody sees Donna is all of a sudden acting bad. She's in the parking lot smoking
next to one of the
cigarette.
New kids, apparently.
Yeah. So there's a gif of that as well, of course. Finally, after Donna's had a chance to try out her new bad girl Lisa Simpson style identity, Mrs. Teasley makes her debut to essentially break confidentiality to Kelly and Brenda and tell them that Donna missed an appointment. And then finally, we get the preview of what we're going to see with Brenda and Donna at Fred Siegel, presaged with this music in clip number 5.
Flung out of control, struck down in a hole. Stand abused, the science cuts through.
Yeah, the music, in addition to being ridiculously on point and a little like too far into the 90s to fit with this, is over the budgest set I've seen on this show or possibly any other show.
Yeah, it's to give you an idea of the quality if you're not watching these episodes, which you should. You really should. They're free. There's no excuse. It looks like you can imagine the girls from Facts of Life going shopping at this store. Like, there's weird, you know, metal grid things hanging on the wall. All the fashions look terrible, like even more terrible than what everyone is wearing. Like, it just, Fred Siegel is a nice department store and they should be very insulted that this is how they were represented on the show.
Yeah. And even the B-roll of the outside of the store, the font looked sufficiently vintage that I suspect the production recycled from an older spelling show, exterior from like Charlie's Angels.
I can tell you actually, that is legit. That's still what it looks like. They haven't updated their signage. That's still what it looks like now. Cause my, not to brag, but my hair salon was on the same block as that location.
Oh,
so it is actually what
them.
It still looks like. Anywho. So Brenda confronts Donna and we find out what her deal is in clip number 6.
Well, you guys are pledging sororities. I'll be lucky if I can even get a job. I'm an idiot, Brenda. A total idiot.
What are you talking about?
What, do you want me to spell it out for you?
No.
300 math. 20 verbal.
Oh my god.
Are you happy now?
I know.
Donna, it's only a test.
Right. Well, it's just like my mom says. I better find a rich guy to marry me. Because I'm too stupid to take care of myself.
Wow. Felice would say that. It's true.
She would. And you know what? She's kind of not wrong. I mean, that is probably Donna's best strategy. But yeah, I love how Brenda's reaction to Donna's scores is like unvarnished horror. Like, you know, yeah. Even if that were true and, you know, we don't find out what we eventually find out about Donna, like there are other things that she could do. It doesn't mean that she's, you know, actually special, despite my joke up top. But anyway.
Yeah. Speaking of special, mm-hmm. immediately previous to this, when Brenda like reveals her that she stalked Donna to Fred Siegel.
Yeah.
Donna's like, oh, what are you doing here? Doesn't care. Is trying to blow Brenda off. And mm-hmm. Brenda announces that Dylan is there to pick up, quote, a sports coat.
I know.
That's not a thing. And even if it were, it's not a thing Dylan would own.
Yeah.
Why?
I also don't think that location has an upstairs, but that's beside the point.
anyway, moving on.
Finally, Mrs. Teasley and Donna have their long-awaited sit-down, and we can tell how sad Donna is because she's in a black turtleneck, and this is what we learn. Well, sort of. This is the preamble to what we learn in clip 7.
Now, according to your records, it wasn't until junior high school that your grades fell off so dramatically. Do you have any idea why?
I started noticing guys more.
Seriously, Donna.
I don't know. I just can't take tests.
But in class, you understand?
Sure. But when I sit down and I have to do it all so fast, my brain just overloads. And I go blank. Look, this is a waste of time. I obviously just don't have what it takes.
What you may have is a learning disability.
Great. Just what I need.
No. Lots of people have learning disabilities. It's nothing to be ashamed of.
You're just trying to come up with another word for stupid. Well, it won't work. I just have to accept it. I am stupid.
I'm fine with that. I'm comfortable with that assessment.
So Mrs. Teasley goes on to explain she probably just needs special accommodations like more time and possibly to take her tests orally rather than written, blah, blah, blah. But then Donna gets the best line as she sums it up in clip number 8.
Oh, there's some fancy name for it, but the bottom line is I'm not a dummy.
Oh, is that the bottom line?
Okay, first of all, if you weren't a dummy, I think you would learn what the name of it was. But I love the idea that either Mrs. Teasley was like, don't worry about it, you don't need to know. Or whoever wrote this episode was like, I could look something up that's legit, but who cares? Because fair enough. Donna has learning disability unspecified. Fair enough.
I don't think we hear about this again, except maybe like during finals once.
Yeah, I think when they take their SATs again, it becomes an issue. But yes, I think you're right. Moving on to our A plot, Killer Chandler. So we open the episode with Brandon, who you will recall is the sports editor of the West Beverly Blaze. A lot of parents read it. And he's watching this kid, who's played by Matthew Perry, playing tennis very aggressively. So aggressively, in fact, that he breaks his racket. And that is the opening for Brandon to go and introduce himself in clip number 9.
How many of those things you go through a week? Depends whose face I see on the ball. Wood, huh?
Yeah.
Bjorn Borg used to racket like this.
Now I'm impressed. Then again, you're an impressive guy. Lettered in 3 sports, straight A student, debating team, environmental awareness program. You interned at the governor's office last summer?
Yeah, listen, Walsh, I told you no interviews.
You know, Borg didn't become a star until he started talking to the press. You gotta learn how to take the heat.
Okay.
You got it. You're kidding.
No. Just make sure to spell my name right.
What? What heat?
First of all, if you're that big of a big shot at tennis, what are you still doing in high school? You'd be out on the tour.
Yeah.
You definitely would be using that bullshit Soviet Russia, I must crush you ball machine. Like, that thing is from the 50s.
Okay.
The 1850s. Third of all, I told you, Walsh, no interviews.
Really? Yeah. It's a good intro for this guy who's very touchy and yet easily convinced to do whatever by Brandon. Then it's a really weird storyline. So Brandon goes to tell Andrea that he's going to do the senior spotlight on this kid, and then decides to start his research, as he always does, with Steve the Exposition Fairy in clip number 10.
Steve, just the man I was looking for.
What's up?
You got the scoop on everybody. You know anything about Roger Azarian?
What's to know? I'll probably get a Rhodes Scholarship, marry Miss America, and run for president.
Sounds like a perfect specimen.
Well, being a perfect specimen is easy when you're George Azarian's son.
How'd he make all his money, anyway?
Self-made. He started at the bottom. Now he owns half of Orange County. He's got houses in New York, Hawaii, France.
A couple hotels on Park Place and Boardwalk.
Yeah, but this isn't Monopoly money. You know, my mom used to date this guy when he owned the Apollo Studios. Now, if she'd have married him, I'd have had a shot at Stanford.
Yeah?
Yeah. Word has it that he built a library up there just so old Rog will get in. What would it take to get my dad to do that for me? About 10 million bucks.
I love how Steve is supplying the same purpose here as he did in the episode where Brandon was dating the mom, where Brandon's just like, what is this character's deal? And Steve just has to tell him everything. Like, I mean, I guess that Steve would know this stuff, but it's also kind of lazy storytelling.
So many things about this clip. Like, first of all, if you're that big a shot that you're not doing interviews with the West Beverly Blaze, which a lot of parents read, including your dad, why are you still in high school and not out on the tennis tour? If you're going to be in high school and not out on the tennis tour, why are you using a Soviet Russian ball machine? And, like, that is not the whole Borg racket. I really can't wait for our esteemed colleague John Ramos, who is much more expert on tennis and its histoire than I am, to weigh in the comments. But that looked like a badminton racket, which is why he was able to break it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean,
I
it looked
never know
really
that.
Teeny.
I guess it does. I mean, it's hard to tell because the angle once it's broken, but yeah. I mean, Matthew Perry, I guess, was actually a real teen tennis star when he was a kid. So I assume that's why it's this and not some, I don't know. I mean, I guess tennis is kind of a solitary sport, so it sort of fits the character. But yeah, he was, I mean, not enough of a big shot that he did it in even a semi-pro way. But I believe I read that that was something that he did as a kid.
His actual, like, tennis playing looked fine to me. I was just, like, taken with the ball machine that was, like, looked like it had been crafted from a tank that someone found outside of Minsk, and also with the aggro guitar that just let us know that he's a really intense guy.
Oh, fuck yeah. So Brandon goes to tell Andrea that he's landed this interview with this whale of a student for the senior spotlight, and then goes and starts his research, as he always does, with Steve, and that is clip number 10.
Steve, just the man I was looking for.
What's up?
You got the scoop on everybody. You know anything about Roger Azarian?
What's to know? I'll probably get a Rhodes Scholarship, marry Miss America, and run for president.
Sounds like a perfect specimen.
Well, being a perfect specimen is easy when you're George Azarian's son.
How'd he make all his money, anyway?
Self-made. He started at the bottom. Now he owns half of Orange County. He's got houses in New York, Hawaii, France.
A couple hotels on Park Place and Boardwalk.
Yeah, but this isn't Monopoly money. You know, my mom used to date this guy when he owned the Apollo Studios. Now, if she'd have married him, I'd have had a shot at Stanford.
Yeah?
Yeah. Word has it that he built a library up there just so old Rog will get in. What would it take to get my dad to do that for me? About 10 million bucks.
Wow, libraries were cheap back then.
I kind of love that Steve is fulfilling the exact same purpose in this episode that he was in the one where Brandon dates a mom, where Brandon just goes to him and is like, tell us a lot of background about this brand new character, and Steve has to do it.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah.
See you later.
See you much, much later. Bye. anyway, so Brandon goes over to Roger's house after work, and Roger leaves him alone to, like, basically snoop around everywhere. And I mean literally everywhere. He's, like, in Roger's dad's study, finds a case full of all these guns, and then, like, helps himself to open it. It's not locked at all. Roger comes in and picks out his favorite one, which I guess was formerly known owned by Dashiell Hammett, and lets Brandon get his fingerprints all over it. And Brandon doesn't care because he's an idiot. And this is where we start to get the sense that this is going to be our Little Archie Noir episode, or Little Archie Noir storyline, at least, because they're in this very dark Tudor mansion. It's all very blah-de blah. You know, the Dashiell Hammett thing is kind of a tip, but there's a lot of shots where, like, Brandon is standing beside some Venetian blinds and, like, the light is shining through in just this way. Like, I get what they were trying to do, but also it's sort of like it's probably lost on this audience and is also very silly.
Yeah, huge overreach.
Mm-hmm. So they're walking outside when we hear a little bit more about how weird Roger is in clip 11.
Hey, thanks for the tour, man. I hope I wasn't rude to ask, but I've never seen a place like this before.
Big enough for two people, you think?
Who, your mom and dad?
So what do you want to know for this piece you're writing?
Oh, well, I thought we'd start with,
no,
you know,
tape.
Just to... Excuse me?
Well, it's just the recorder makes me feel uncomfortable. So.
Well, it's just for accuracy. But if you're not cool with it, I'll just work from my notes.
Nice journalistic standards, Ace.
Yeah, that would also be so much more work. Oh, my God. But anyway, at this moment, they're interrupted by the return home of George Azarian, who, for such a master of the universe, sure gets home very early in the day.
And drives himself.
And drives, yeah, and drives himself. Also, no sign anywhere on the property of, like, anyone who works there, which it's giant. Like, there would be tons of people. But anyway, he comes into the scene, and I left open his, I left little bit of his chuckle at the beginning so you could hear how much he is a caricature that might as well be called Whitey Whiteman. And that's clip number 12.
Roger had lunch today at the club with Pete Garrison. He's an old fraternity brother, Stanford Admissions.
Dad, I told you not to.
Don't worry, it's under control. Oh, I mentioned your screenplay to Sol, and he said he'd be glad to have somebody at the agency give it a read. If I can't call in some favors for my own son, who can I do it for, right?
Dad? Can we talk about this later?
Don't worry. It's entirely off the record, right, Brandon?
Yes, sir.
Have a good interview.
You actually wrote a screenplay?
Well, every busboy in Hollywood has a screenplay under his arm.
Can I read it?
No one's read it.
What about your father? He said he was going to get you an agent.
He doesn't have to read it to get me an agent. He just has to pull strings.
But you don't want him to.
Hey, this is supposed to be a story about me, right? Not my dad.
Sorry.
So you really want to see it?
At this point, if I'm Brandon, I'm like, you know what? You are super touchy about everything, so bye. It's not worth it, but I'm not Brandon.
No. You're not.
So Brandon does get a copy of the screenplay and takes it home. He leaves it out on the counter, so Brenda immediately starts snooping in it. Brandon does not say anything about any concern for Roger's privacy because he never said it was okay for Brenda to read it. And yet, guess what's happening in clip 13?
I will be Janine, and you can be Robert. Fade in on exterior Beverly Hills mansion day. A major Tudor north of Sunset. Sprawling grounds, pool. Robert hops out of his Porsche. Doesn't Roger have a Porsche? Janine, a gorgeous Twin Peaksy blonde, kisses him with all the pent-up passion of her 16 years. Give me a break.
Cut to the swimming pool. Day. Robert and Janine are drying off after a swim, her bikini revealing just enough to command Robert's full attention.
Let's go back to the house. I'm freezing.
Not the house. He's still there.
Come on, he's not so bad.
You wouldn't say that if he was your father.
Well, what can you do? You can't pick your relatives.
I could kill him.
Come on. You don't mean that.
Yes, I do.
It scares me when you talk like that.
Yeah, but does it turn you on? Come on, in here. No phone. No father. No interruptions.
So needless to say, as that clip is happening, everything that they're reading is being played out by Matthew Perry as Roger and the gorgeous Twin Peaksy blonde, which I guess drink Twin Peaks reference.
Well, yeah.
So the phone is Kelly. She's calling with her aforementioned SAT results. And Brenda blows up Brandon's spot in clip 14.
Brandon, wait for me.
What?
Not you. Brandon's reading the screenplay that Roger Azarian wrote.
Oh, God, don't tell her.
Roger wrote a screenplay? Really?
You know him?
Babe, not only do I know him, but I know him.
You didn't.
Yeah, then the jerk dumped me because his father said I wasn't good enough for him.
Brenda, hang up. This is getting really weird.
Look, I gotta go. Bye.
Listen to this.
I love that you. Kelly's like,
Robert takes
Roger.
The Walther in his palm. Fingering the gun almost seductively, he locks Janine in his gaze. This is how I'm gonna do it. This is how I'm gonna kill my father.
You can see how I have such a hard time ending these clips because the music is like... kiss noise. Anyway, so the next day at school, Brandon goes to...
Next time, just say kiss noise. That was really
cool. Okay. Brandon goes to school. He finds Andre in the Blaze office and he tries to weasel out of doing this story because he doesn't want to, I don't know. He's concerned for on Roger's behalf because he's such a weirdo. But Andre won't let him get out of it. And when we see him later, he's eating lunch and he's rapt reading this screenplay, which... Again, a screenplay is like if it's a normal length movie, you know, it's a page per minute of screen time. So like Brandon really should have finished reading this last night, but whatever. Roger finds him reading it and he's gross and weird in clip 15.
So what do you think? Should I chuck college and try my fame and fortune at being a screenwriter?
There, man.
Sit down. So did you get to any of the hot sex scenes?
A couple. I'm only a third of the way through it.
Got a pretty wild imagination.
Well, truth is stranger than fiction, Brandon.
You mean this is true?
What do you mean?
Nothing, nothing. It's just, it's very riveting.
Well, thanks. Thank you. I take that as a compliment. Listen, I got season tickets to the Dodgers.
Box seats. Is this an invitation?
Well, I'm not going to be around, so I thought maybe you'd like them.
Why me? Trying to buy me off?
Listen, if you don't want them, there's plenty of people who would.
No, hey, I didn't mean it that way. These are great. Thanks. Maybe if you can change your plans, we could go together.
So, do you want them or not?
Sure. Thanks.
I forgot, in the previous conversation with Andrea, he asks her about what they say on the rap line when people tell them that they're going to hurt their parents or whatever, and Andrea's like, we listen, and then she figures out that he's referring to Roger, and that was the clip that you heard at the very intro of the episode where he essentially tells her as well that he thinks Roger is going to carry out the acts that are described in the screenplay. So after this exchange with Roger, Brandon is even more concerned and he decides to continue his research by talking to Dylan in clip 16.
Oh, Jesus.
You and your old man. My favorite subject. You two don't always fully appreciate each other. Yeah.
We do.
And with all his money and how complicated that's made things for you, Brandon... What do you want to ask me? When things got really bad between the two of you, did you ever want to hurt him?
Why?
Because assuming you did, I need to know what kept you from going over the edge.
Really want to know?
Yeah.
No.
You and your sister, you keep me from going over the edge.
What kept you going over the edge a month ago before you met us, weirdo? Also, I don't know why Dylan
was
has
it
to be
your giant pants that doubled as a parachute.
They held him back like a NASCAR.
Unfunny car.
Totally. So then we get even more from this screenplay that Brandon is the slowest reader of in history. You see this Robert, the Roger standing and talking to his shrink about why, how he wants to kill his dad. And then his Robert in his hot car, that's exactly what Roger's pulling up to the house and getting a key from under the flower pot, and getting the Walther out of the case and sneaking up on his dad.
Forever.
It takes forever. Finally, he gets to the dad. The dad stands up. He shoots the dad. And even the shooting has to be in slow motion, like, seriously, get on with it. But that's when Cindy comes in, tells Brandon to go to bed, because seriously, you've been reading the screenplay for an entire day. Get on with it! So then he is continuing with the story, because he has to, and Roger brings him home after the next day of school, and that's what we hear in clip 17.
I love this car. You could have killed me, but I love this car. Well, I'll leave it to you in my will. Hey, I finished your script.
Oh, yeah? What'd you think? Oscar written all over it?
It's pretty good.
Thanks.
There's a lot of real stuff in there. The character's you, right?
Get real, Walsh.
This is also right after Roger challenged Dylan to a Porsche drag race. Like, okay, we get it. They're rich. But also, this is Brandon completely ignoring the advice that Andrea gave him, which is just to listen, not to push him and try and get him to tell you things. Brandon doesn't listen, even to advice about listening. So then they get to the house. George Azarian is on the phone businessing when they come in. He seriously is like, I don't care about the yen. Like, all right. Clearly a writer didn't feel like doing any research about it. So he asked for the mail. There's an envelope from Stanford, but it's thin. So Brandon excuses himself so that he can stand in the hallway and listen to George yelling at Roger for a while. And then finally, Brandon's like, I'm going to just go. And so he goes out to the car to get his bag. And in the car, he finds a gun, which it's the same one. He picks it up again, gets more of his fingerprints on it. And
stares into space for like 45 minutes. And also, offer him a fucking ride home, Roger.
Seriously. So then it's an act break, of course. And then Brandon calls Andrea at the rap line to recap the episode in clip 18.
Roger Azarian has a gun.
He told me he has a whole collection of them.
Not in his house, Andre. He's driving around with a Walther in his car. Plus, he just found out he didn't get into Stanford. His dad's freaking out, and he's upset.
Calm down, okay?
Nobody believes me. Not Brenda, not the police. But I really think he's going to do it. He's going to kill his father.
You called the police? What did they say?
There's nothing they can do.
Brandon, this is out of my league.
I mean, what makes you so sure you're right?
I'm not. But what if I am?
Okay. A few things. First of all, what makes you so sure you're right is I'm Brandon. That's how.
Yeah.
And second, what did he tell the cops when he called them? Like, I found a vintage collector licensed gun in a kid's car. Who owns it? Like, that's not a crime. Last I checked.
Yeah, no.
So then he tries to get Jim on side, and that's what we hear in clip 19.
I respect what you're trying to do, Brandon, but you don't even know if this kid needs help.
You don't know him, Dad. He's one of those kids you look at, it seems like he's got it all. I mean, I wanted everything he had. The house, the car, the freshman fan club. But he's all messed up inside. I don't know what to do.
Sarah?
He's all messed up inside. What? And also, and you know him after
2 days.
2 days of taking forever to read his screenplay, like one page per minute. And I don't know, having no journalistic standards. And shut up, Brandon. And that pronunciation of dad, we should start keeping a count.
Yeah. Dad.
You don't know him, dad.
Yeah.
Shut up.
So Brandon gets an idea. Someone lets him borrow, either Jim or Cindy lets him borrow their car so that he can drive it to Roger's house and follow all of the steps in the screenplay. And it's, again, super duper slow. He finds the key under the flower pot, goes in the office. Oh my God, no one's there. That was suspenseful. Then the next day at school, Brandon is flipping shit. He goes to the tennis coach. Tennis coach hasn't seen Roger. And then Brandon is even more worried, which he takes to Andrea in clip 20.
I've called his house all day. No answer. He's not home. He didn't show up for school. His father's not in his office.
Brandon, this isn't a Hardy Boys mystery. What do you think he did? Chop his father up and bury him in the backyard.
Look, he's playing some bizarre game of cat and mouse. I keep thinking if I look at this closely enough, I'll find the answer.
You don't even know where he is.
Oh, my God. No phones. No father. No interruptions. Cover for me in chemistry.
To the B-mobile. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, nothing. That's just the Simpsons line. Go ahead.
That's not what a game of cat and mouse is, writers. Just... Yeah. Just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, that's something a writer heard in a real noir movie and thought, oh, that sounds good. So Brandon goes to find Dylan in where else? Tech class. Gets
where
his,
he lives.
Where he lives. The only class he goes to, apparently. Guess that's why he doesn't need to take the SAT. Borrows his keys, drives over to Roger's, runs to the pool house, sees Roger through the door, hunched on the kitchen counter drinking. He's on such a bender, you guys, that he's going to get ice every time he refills. Ridiculous. And then, of course, he's got that gun and he's like shooting at his dad's honors, and it falls to Brandon, as it always must, to talk him off a ledge. And that's clip 21.
Come on, put the gun away, Roger. I can't. I need it. No, you don't. Look, I know you're angry at your father, but killing him's not the answer. I'm not gonna kill my father. What about the script? It's only a movie, Brandon. What good would it be anyway? I'd still be a failure. Take a look around you. My whole life has been, can you top this? Well, I wanted to show my father that I could do it, that I could be just as good as him. But I can't.
Not at acting.
And I never could.
Then he turns the gun on himself, you guys.
In a way, no one has ever held.
You ever looked down the barrel of a gun? Come on, Roger. Go home, man. You don't want to see this.
You're right.
You're right. I don't.
Forever.
Let me help you, man. Let me be your friend. Friends? I don't have friends.
Hey,
I'm
drugs.
Your friend, Roger. Don't do this. Give me the gun.
Give him the gun!
Give him the gun!
End the scene!
Or shoot yourself.
Either way.
I think the half-life of the stuff in the gun is the gun will actually turn to goo before he does this.
Yeah, probably. Oh, God.
He gives Brandon the gun and sobs like a weirdo.
Oh, no, he's got a second smaller gun.
Well, and his idea of acting sobbing is like when a Labrador has a chew toy. He's like, like whipping his head back and forth. That's one thing. Here's another thing, Brandon. Don't bray at an armed man. It's not a good idea.
No. I mean, do, because then he might shoot you and end all our torment. But for your own safety, don't. So Brandon saves the day again. Next day at school, he runs into Dylan in his Star Trek shirt and gives him back his keys because I guess he just decided to keep the car overnight. Like, okay. And Steve is concerned about Dylan's choice to lend him the car in clip 22.
Gentlemen.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, I've been looking for you. Next time you take my car, put gas in it.
You loaned him your car? What, are you crazy?
Seriously, do we all not remember how he totaled his own shitty car? What's he going to do with a nice car? Yeah. Also need to call out Sarah in our shared notes document referred to this as the Byron Mobile, which is what we will be calling it from now on.
Fucking A.
So then we end with Brandon going to the hospital to visit Roger. He happens to be coming in just as Roger's dad is coming out. And George is so grateful and has to tell Brandon, this kid, that they're getting help. Like, that's not Brandon's business. You don't have to tell him anything. Whatever. Then Brandon goes in to visit Roger, and they sit in manly, mostly silence, but Brandon wants to reassure him that he won't break his confidence like he broke his confidence 50 other times in this episode in clip 23.
I want you to know I'm not going to write about any of this.
No, I want you to. I can't hold it inside any longer. Maybe it'll help someone, you know?
You sure?
Yeah. That's your story. So how come you're not at the stadium?
It's the day of the baseball game.
I thought maybe we could watch the game together. Yeah, they don't have a TV in here. Roger. That's what friends are for.
You've got a tiny portable TV.
Dodgers trying to fight their way off of the canvas here in the bottom of the ninth inning.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a brand new ball game. In
but
case you don't get it.
It's not an actual Dodgers ball game because that's not Mr. Vin Scully.
Oh.
Yeah.
I
sorry.
Wouldn't have got that.
To be baseball realism nerd.
Sure. No, that's important. But I also think it's important to note that even though Brandon's all like, what are friends for? Were you wondering, do we ever see him again? You weren't. We don't. As
moved
usual.
To New York.
Yeah, right.
Got married to that girl from the Springsteen video. Good for him.
I think there's a 90210 Phantom Zone, you know, like from the Superman 2 where they all get trapped in the mirror.
Yes.
All these people are in.
Locked.
Yes. Yeah. Roger, the mom, Surf Betty, yep. Etc. So yeah, that's this episode. I think we got a good answer to the question of why Matthew Perry was not invited to Jennifer Aniston's recent wedding to Justin Theroux. She might have been watching along to this podcast, come up to this episode and been like, oh shit, no.
Yeah. I think our joy in this episode, I think this is one that if you aren't watching along and you're just sort of like listening and looking at the visual aids, I can't really recommend that you watch it because it's so much filler, but you can fast forward through the like myriad instances of creeping up to Azarian Senior's office. You can just like skip over those, but the visual aids you definitely need because Matthew Perry is so over the top.
He's so it's really crazy how little they reined him in. I mean, I kind of admire it cause he's like, well, it's a teen soap. I'm going to teen soap it up. And he really does. Like he's,
yeah.
So much more. I mean, you know, we just talked about Melrose Place in Extra Hot Great last week with Heather and Jessica. And this was definitely his performance would have not been out of place on that show either. Like it's that nighttime soapy, which is good. I mean, it gives us a sign of like where things may go with the show. That is awesome. But let's wind it up. Episode MVP. Sarah, who is your choice?
Mr. Steve Sanders, it's not close. Rolling his eyes at Donna. Are you crazy? Best.
I kind of love George Azarian.
I think that's a good choice too.
Motivating Roger to do all this stuff that's so ill-advised and poorly thought out and doesn't work. And also on the phone, denigrating the yen in relation to the Deutschmark. God love you, George Azarian.
I know.
I'm glad you didn't marry.
This is like win, George. Glad you didn't die.
And LVP. Least valuable player, Brenda. Really not a super great friend to Donna in this episode overall. Sarah.
Donna's parents.
Yeah, that's solid. You better find a rich man to marry you because you can't take care of yourself. True, yeah. But also mean.
Spoiler, that's not what happened.
No, it is not. Oh, God. And the Kim challenge.
Mad, bad, and dangerous to know.
Fun. 5 reasons from this episode in which Dylan shows us that he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Number one, you might get drawn into a drag racing situation if you're not as cool as him, I guess.
True. He'll lend his car to known drunk drivers.
And let them keep them for a really long time. That's also that's also noteworthy, I think. He might kill
relies on the Walshes for emotional support.
Yes, and still might kill his dad, given how vague he was in his answers to Brandon's questions. So look out, Jack McKay. And I think that's 5. Yeah.
Yep. All right. Next time on Again With This, speaking of Dylan and pants, Brandon and Steve coach Little League with stick insect results for Dylan. For visual aids from this episode and coverage of Matthew Perry's new grill, please visit us at previously.tv. You can follow us on Twitter at previouslyTV. You can like us on Facebook, and you can follow each of us on Twitter as well. Producer and pronouncer David T. Cole is at Glark. I'm at Tomato Nation.
I'm at Tara Ariano. Go ahead.
Until next time.
Worst ending ever.
And this is your Flash the Cash DJ, and you're listening to KWBH. See ya!